Welcome to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Freddie Freeman, strong inside. As he coped with his son's illness and his own injuries, Dodgers first baseman Freddie Freeman displayed resilience in an historic World Series performance. And this feature written by Sports Illustrated writer Tom Verducci. What does it mean to be strong? Physical power, of course. Strong is rooted in Old English and Germanic words for severe and taut, T-A-U-T, as in a chord. Strong as in what it takes to blast one of the greatest World Series home runs ever hit. Strong also means power beyond the physical. It is the tautness of will. It is enduring a broken right middle finger, a bone bruise and severe sprain of the right ankle, and a broken cartilage in the sixth rib, and getting shot up with a numbing agent in between at-bats of a playoff game, all within 50 days. It is rushing 1,300 miles home to find your child fighting for his life, hooked up to feeding tubes and a ventilator while his body is in full paralysis. To physically see your 3-year-old son not be able to breathe on his own, says Dodgers first baseman Freddie Freeman as his voice cracks at the memory of his son Maximus in July. You could still hear it in my voice. It's hard, really hard. No one should ever go through that. It's just sad, unquote. This was the year that Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge rewrote history. Ohtani became the first player with 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases in a season. Judge joined Babe Ruth as the only players not connected to PEDs to hit 50 homers a third time. But if you want the best proxy for baseball in 2024, not because of one famous swing, but because of the strength behind it, this is the year of Freddie. You know, I've been through a lot in my life, Freeman says. I lost my mom to skin cancer when I was 10, and I almost lost my dad to a heart attack when I was 12. I think things happen in life for a reason. I've never been patient about my swing or something that I expect to happen. I want to be good that minute. With this, you couldn't have anything happen that minute. You had to wait. You had to wait and see if it was going to work out. You had to wait for him to recover. You had to wait for him to eat ice again so he can come out of the hospital. I had patience. I think that's what I learned, unquote. Ernest Hemingway wrote A Farewell to Arms by drawing on his service as a volunteer ambulance driver in World War I, when shrapnel from a mortar blast on the Italian front mangled his leg. The world breaks everyone, he wrote, and afterward, many are strong at the broken places, unquote. The sixth batter due in the bottom of the ninth inning of World Series Game 1, Freddie Freeman did not see history on his doorstep. He was nothing more than a cheerleader then, rooting for the bottom of the lineup to mount something against the New York Yankees 3-2 lead. Then fortune fell LA's way as crazily as lucky pachinko balls. A walk, a single off the second baseman's glove, a pitching change in which New York asked Nestor Cortes, a left-handed starter, to save a game for the first time in his 7-year major league career, every ricochet meant history was drawing nearer to him. Freeman is an old baseball soul. To prepare to face a pitcher, he does not like scouting reports, and he does not like video. In 2022, his first season with the Dodgers after a dozen years playing for the Atlanta Braves, he told his teammates to stop burying their noses in their iPads and instituted a 2-tablet dugout maximum to facilitate more conversations. "I'm not a video guy, really, ever," he says. To prepare to face Cortes, he wanted answers to his usual 2 go-to questions. First, what does his fastball do? Second, how does he pitch with runners in scoring position? Otani was stepping into the batter's box to hit against Cortes when Freeman, now 2 spots away, suddenly said to himself, "You know what? Let me have that iPad. I want to look at how he pitches Shohei." It was Otani's iPad, and Otani had used it to watch a string of pitches that Cortes had thrown to him. The pitches were still queued up. Freeman went ahead and hit play. Freeman and Otani are tall lefties who hit for power and average. Watching the pitches, Freeman deduced a pattern about how Cortes might approach him. Fastballs up and in, and cutters and sweepers away. He devised a game plan. "If I look out over the plate," he told himself, "I might expand the zone too much, and I don't want to do that. What if I bring my sights closer? Maybe that will help me lay off the cutter and the sweeper away. Those aren't good pitches to hit anyway, left on left." So Freeman decided what he would do. He would look for an inside fastball. Otani flied out, though it took such an acrobatic catch from Alex Verdugo that the left fielder tumbled over the sidewall and into the stands, moving the runners up a base. So with second and third base occupied and first base open, the Yankees intentionally walked Mookie Betts. Quote, "As soon as the Verdugo catch happened, I was like, okay, that's an intentional walk, as everybody should," Freeman says. "You don't want to pitch to Mookie with any left-hander. So I knew I was coming up in that situation. You can actually see on video I was already in the batter's box before Mookie even started to run to first base. I just knew," unquote. New York pitching coach Matt Blake walked to the mound to meet with Cortes and catcher Austin Wells. Bases loaded, bottom of the 9th, the Dodgers down to their last out, most of the crowd on its feet. Freeman was alone with his thoughts. Quote, "I just kept replaying it in my head," Freeman says of his plan. "Okay, what are you going to do? What are you doing?" And I was like, "I'm looking in. I'm going to just look heater in. That's all I'm going to do, just so I don't swing at this stuff away. Heater in." And then, it turned out that he threw it right where I was looking, unquote. A career 300 hitter, Freeman was hitting 259 after 22 games this year, his third worst start to a season. But like a cork that always bobs to the surface, he was hitting 301 by the time he was named an All-Star. That's when the world started to break him. The 3 children of Freddie and his wife Chelsea, Charlie, age 8, and 3-year-olds Brandon and Max, all were sick at the All-Star game in Arlington, Texas, with flu-like symptoms. Max woke up with his eyes crusted shut. On the flight home, he threw up on his father. It was like he had some infection, Freeman says. We just thought a couple days, give him some medicine, and he'll be okay. And by the weekend, he had no problems. Everyone was feeling better, unquote. But that Monday, July 22nd, Max woke up with a limp. And by Wednesday, he was not eating or drinking. He was hospitalized in Orange County. Doctors ran tests and discharged him the next morning. They thought it might be transient synovitis, a benign condition that causes temporary inflammation of the hip joint. The next day, Friday, Max had a 2:30 p.m. appointment with the family pediatrician. "This isn't transient synovitis," the doctor told Chelsea. "I'm calling you an ambulance. He needs to go to the hospital now," unquote. Freeman was preparing to play a game in Houston. Chelsea FaceTimed him with the news. Freeman rushed to the office of manager Dave Roberts. He let Roberts listen in as he spoke with the pediatrician. The doctor's like, "This is not good. He's going to the hospital now," Freeman says, "and I'm just bawling, crying," unquote. Freeman rushed to the airport to catch a flight home. His father, Fred, met him and drove him to the hospital. Doctors ran more tests. They searched for tumors. They administered MRIs. They gave Max a spinal tap, and then another. Doctors diagnosed Max as having Guillain-Barré syndrome, which they traced to his illness at the All-Star game. It kicked Max's immune system into gear, but instead of attacking the sickness, it attacked the nerves in his lower back, just above his glute, causing the paralysis. After 5 days of treatment, Max was taken off the ventilator. On the eighth day, he was discharged. He still had trouble walking. Freeman missed 8 games, more than the past 4 seasons combined. He was blown away by the support that his family received from the baseball community. Opponents, managers, and executives, including Commissioner Rob Manfred, reached out to him. "One time I'm sitting in the hospital seeing Max on a ventilator," Freeman says, "and the whole Brewers coaching staff sends a video about how they're thinking about us and how we respect how you play the game and how you are the person you are, and those are the things that help you get through those moments. Honestly, the baseball community and family that we have, it is special. You don't know when you're going to need the support system, but it surely shows itself," unquote. Angels outfielder Mike Trout, who was on the injured list, offered to help in any way. "Let me do something," Trout told him. "Can I at least bring you donuts?" unquote. "Mike," Freeman replied, laughing, "do you think I'm putting donuts in my body right now?" unquote. On August the 5th, Freeman returned to the lineup. The fans at Dodger Stadium gave him a standing ovation. "It made it a little easier to come to the field," he says, "because I was struggling so hard, like, should I even come here? Is it the right thing to do? I see all that and I'm like, okay, yes, I'm supposed to do everything I can, and Max is going to be okay," unquote. Then there were more broken pieces. On August 17th, 2 weeks after Max was discharged, Freeman broke his right middle finger while fielding a ground ball. Over the next 6 games, he went 3-for-23. Manager Roberts ordered him to take the next series off. "I don't even remember what happened after Max," says Freeman. "I came back and I was grinding, but I was just there physically. Mentally, I wasn't really there," unquote. 1 month later, on September 26th, Freeman broke again. He suffered a bone bruise and a sprain to his right ankle on an awkward play at first base. 9 days later, at a news conference on the eve of the National League Division Series, Freeman hinted that he would be in the starting lineup against San Diego. He headed straight to the batting cage. It was 7:30 p.m. With his first swing, Freeman felt pain in his rib cage near his sternum in the middle of the chest. Had he tweaked something in that area the previous day during a workout, treated it at home, and it had felt better, but now something was not right? He thought, maybe I was just having to swing through it to loosen it up. And then, on his 13th swing, yes, Freeman is meticulous enough about his work to know, the pain exploded so excruciatingly that he dropped his bat and fell to his knees. He could not walk. He had to be helped out of the cage. At 9:45 p.m., he was on an MRI machine. He didn't get out until 11:15 p.m. They diagnosed it as a costal cartilage defect in my sixth rib, which is essentially a broken rib, he says. Freeman had one question. Can I play with it? Doctors told him that they would do everything they could to deaden the pain. He kept the injury secret outside the clubhouse. People were asking, is he going to play or is he not going to play, Freeman says. It was all about my ankle, but no one knew about my rib. I was trying to keep that quiet because I didn't want the Padres to know. So we just tried to mask it, and we did a pretty good job, unquote. Teammate Miguel Rojas estimated that Freeman took a shot to numb the pain every 25 minutes. It wasn't every 25 minutes, Freeman says. I really don't want to disclose what I was doing, but yeah, there were changes involved that helped me get through the games. Everything was doctor approved, unquote. Asked if the injured area was numb while he swung the bat during games, Freeman says, quote, it was completely numb, and then the numbing wore off, so he had to re-numb, unquote. Freeman went 3-for-11 in the first three games of the National League Divisional Series. He could not put weight on his right ankle when he swung. His rib was numb. It was too much for his father to watch. Fred FaceTimed his son at 11 p.m. after Game 3, a loss that put the Dodgers on the brink of elimination. Quit it, Fred told Freddie. For the year, it just needs to stop. You've got to look out for yourself, what it means for your health down the road when you're older. You're doing too much. It needs to stop, unquote. His father had not spoken to him like that in years. He knew his father was right. The Dodgers won Game 4 without Freeman, 8-0, and Game 5 with him, 2-0, to advance to the National League Championship Series and face the Mets. The rib healed enough not to need numbing, but the ankle remained a problem. Freeman didn't play in games 4 and 6 of the NLCS. The Dodgers had 4 days off before the start of the World Series. He made sure not to run, the one activity that most bothered his ankle. When he was announced as part of player introductions before game 1, it was the first time he had run in 6 days. He felt no pain. The training staff remarked how good he looked jogging from the dugout to the foul line. Something else happened during the days between the NLCS and the World Series. Freeman found his batting stroke. 2 days before the World Series, he called his father. Dad, I'm going to hit. I've got it, he told him. I figured it out. I'm hitting a line drive every time at the shortstop in batting practice. I'm good. I've got this," unquote. "Oh," Fred said in a flat voice, "that's great," unquote. Says Freddie Freeman, quote, "It was like, okay, sure, yeah. He knew what I was going through. He knew what my injuries were. But I knew in my heart that the pain was in a spot that I could manage, and it wasn't going to get worse," unquote. 36 years and 10 nights before Freeman had a conversation with himself about what to look for on the next pitch, Kirk Gibson did the same. Both moments occurred in the left-hand batter's box at Dodger Stadium during a pause after a walk with two outs in the ninth inning of Game 1 of the World Series. Gibson, recalling a tip from scout Mel Didier, reminded himself that Dennis Eckersley would throw a backdoor slider on a full count. Freeman reminded himself to look for an inside fastball from Cortez. Both hitters, both hobbled by injuries, got exactly what they sought. Both swung the bat at 8:37 p.m. Both hit home runs to near identical spots in the right field pavilion. Freeman's blast was the first grand slam to end a World Series game. It was the first time he had pulled a home run in 55 days. No longer was he broken. Watch the video again. In the background, behind home plate, there is a man sitting in the first row, two seats to the right of Mary Hart, the TV personality. It is Fred Freeman. As the ball soars towards the pavilion and Freddie raises his bat in triumph, Fred rises from his seat. He's the little league father behind the batting cage, watching his son, looking upward to follow the baseball and doing the quick mental geometry to wonder if this might be a home run. Only this is the World Series. Freeman pulled another home run in Game 2, another in Game 3, and another in Game 4. No one had ever homered in the first four games of a World Series. He was named World Series MVP. "I wasn't swinging at balls, and I was hitting the mistakes," he says. "That's all it is. That's when you get hot for a week or two. That's because you're not missing the mistakes. And I didn't miss them for 5 days. And thankfully, it was the most important 5 games of the year," unquote. Every World Series has game-changing plays. Only a few have moments that embed the fabric of American culture. Ruth calling his shot. Mays running down a fly ball with his back to the infield. Fisk waving the ball fair. Gibson pumping his fist. Freeman holding his bat the way Lady Liberty does her torch. On the day that the Dodgers landed home after winning the Game 5 clincher in New York, Freeman went trick-or-treating with his sons along with teammates Clayton Kershaw and Kiki Hernandez and their children. Chelsea had ordered an Iron Man mask to give her husband some cover, but it was so heavy that he went without it. He was quickly recognized more than ever, including by a boy who, after Freeman's Game 1 homer, ditched his Pokemon costume to dress as Freddie Freeman in a number 5 Dodgers jersey. "The $100 jersey I overnighted was worth every penny," the boy's mother wrote on Instagram. Addressing Freeman, she wrote, quote, "Thank you for a Halloween moment that this boy will remember forever and ever," unquote. A few days later, Freeman was in a car hired to take him to appear on Jimmy Kimmel Live. The driver explained how he cried when Freeman hit the grand slam. Freeman's ankle is still swollen. He'll need physical therapy through January. His rib still hurts when he sits in one position for too long. Max undergoes physical therapy 3 or 4 times a week. His brothers love to play with him during the sessions. His ankle flexion and knee function need more time to return to normal. Our neurologist and all of our therapists say that he is far ahead of schedule, Freeman says. He looks great. He's doing really, really well. So hopefully, when you see us in spring training, he'll look like a normal 4-year-old running around, unquote. It was not until November 13th that Freeman watched the home run again. Charlie pulled it up on his iPad. Quickly, the two of them went down a YouTube rabbit hole, he says. It wasn't just the home run itself. It was the many videos that people posted expressing the joy that it gave them. After I hit it, we had a game the next day, so it's hard to take it all in. But then you see all the reactions. When I saw all those people in their homes jumping up and down, running around their houses, it's really amazing. It's so cool about sports is that it can do all this to people and bring so much joy and happiness. I didn't really understand, but now to see that, it's just amazing. I was able to impact people in such a positive way, unquote. After Freeman hit the grand slam and ran the gauntlet of interviews, he repaired to the training room for therapy on his ankle. Each day, he would get to the ballpark at 10:30 a.m. to begin treatment, followed by post-game treatment. He was getting the post-game work done when Chelsea called. "We're still on the field," she said. "What? The game's been over for a while. I'll be right there," unquote. He came back for a private curtain call. They were all there, Chelsea, Charlie, Brandon, Max, Fred, his stepmother, a grandfather, an uncle, and other friends. "You know, a lot of things happened positively in my professional life," Freeman says, "and that only happened because my personal life was much better. And that's because Max is doing better. We got through it, and 3 months later, everyone's smiling. Everything's going to be okay in 2025, hopefully. If not, and that's going to happen in our lifetime, you just handle the speed bumps. Make sure that car makes it over and lands softly, and then you just keep going," unquote. Like a braided cord pulled taut, each sinew intertwined, it is a lesson in what it means to be strong. And again, that feature is entitled Freddie Freeman. After a trying season, the Dodgers produced an historic World Series, written by Sports Illustrated writer Tom Verducci. And in other news from this month's Sports Illustrated, the next feature begins, "The biggest media story in 2024 was essentially bombs away, as in say goodbye to the bursts of NBA news from Adrian Wojnarowski, who changed the way that reporters report and readers consume content, then left his lucrative job at ESPN to go back to campus." And this feature written by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Drive down Main Street in Allegheny, New York, past strip malls and sandwich shops and a never-ending line of steel poles with Bills flags dangling from them, and you will eventually come upon a piece of local history. The Burton Hotel first opened its doors in the 1930s, a post-prohibition no-frills bar and grill that suited the blue-collar locals that it catered to. Students from nearby St. Bonaventure eventually adopted it, drawn in by the cheap beer in plastic cups and well-seasoned half-pound burgers, banding together each night to sing Piano Man after the bartenders announced last call. Their relationship proved mutually beneficial. It was Bonnie's alumni that saved the Burton back in 2019, swooping in to buy the business just before it would have been forced to close. The place stopped operating as a hotel long ago, but its owners still rent out three apartments above the bar. Student athletes occupy two of them. The world's most famous NBA reporter lives in the other. In September, Adrian Wojnarowski announced his retirement from the media, abruptly walking away from ESPN and a $7.3 million annual salary to return to his alma mater, St. Bonaventure, in the newly created position of general manager of the men's basketball program and a $75,000 a year salary. The New York Times covered it. So did CNN, Fox News, and CNBC. On ESPN, the network's remaining newsbreakers, Adam Schefter, Pete Tamel, and Jeff Passan, hit the airwaves to pay tribute. On social media, millions of followers with alerts set for his posts, Woj bombs as they became known, fired off some version of the same question. Why? After all, this wasn't a job, it was the job, the kind that sports journalists spend a career working for. Wojnarowski, Woj for the purposes of brevity and magazine character count, did. He sharpened his reporting chops in the 1990s, covering Jerry Tarkanian's dysfunctional Fresno State program for the Fresno Bee, before spending a decade as a columnist for The Record in New Jersey. In 2007, he pivoted to the NBA beat, first with Yahoo Sports and later ESPN. He has dined with Kobe Bryant, consulted with owners on coaching hires, done the walk and talk, the act of sidling up to a player during his trip from the locker room to his car or the team bus, a reporting technique that, if Woj did not invent, he most certainly made trendy, more times than he can remember. He revolutionized what it means to be a reporter, harnessing social media to disseminate breaking news to an audience with an insatiable appetite for it. It began as an experiment, quote, "This is your spot for Adrian Wojnarowski and Johnny Ludden's breaking NBA news," unquote, read Woj's maiden tweet the day before the 2009 draft. Then it evolved into a platform with a Wembanyama-like reach. Consider, in August, representatives from Kamala Harris's presidential campaign reached out. They had settled on their nominee for vice president and wanted Woj to break it. Alas, another outlet scooped him before he could. So why quit? Some of it, Woj says, is easy to explain. At the age of 55 now, he was burned out. Insiders are the most well-compensated journalists, but the hours are brutal. Holidays, birthdays, barbecues, all threatened by the pursuit of a transaction. Last year, as a Philadelphia 76ers, LA Clippers deal involving James Harden came together, Woj decamped overnight in an airport because he was afraid the Wi-Fi on a cross-country flight would not work. Last summer, he ducked out of a family movie night to break the news of Cavaliers forward Evan Mobley's contract extension. His wife, Amy, refers to his phone as a fifth family member. It goes to bed with you. It goes on vacation with you. It's uninvited, but it's everywhere you go. He was ready to walk away, but he wasn't ready to go away. Enter St. Bonaventure, the 166-year-old Franciscan college that sits on a plot of land in upstate New York, sandwiched between Olean and Allegheny, 70-ish miles from Buffalo, and a lot further from anything else. Notable alums include Hall of Fame center Bob Lanier, Fox anchor Neil Cavuto, and Adrian Wojnarowski, class of 1991. Its basketball program has experienced waves of success, from the Bob Lanier-led rosters that contended for national titles in the late 1960s to the 2018 team that stunned UCLA to pick up its first NCAA tournament win since then. For Woj, everything traces back to St. Bonaventure. He arrived on campus in 1987, lured north from his hometown of Bristol, Connecticut. He met Amy there, connected over a shared love for basketball, journalism, and the white shadow. On their first date, they argued about the coaching effectiveness of Bobby Knight. He learned the craft in the student newsroom, churning out copy for the Bonaventure. Columnists carried the clout in those days, and Woj aimed to be one of them. A roommate, ticketed for law school, once smirked that a sports writer would never earn more than $50,000 a year. $50,000 a year, thought Woj. Are you kidding, he says? I would have signed a 40-year contract, unquote. In 2021, the NCAA, after legislation in more than a dozen states, opened the door for student-athletes to profit from their name, image, and likeness, codified NIL in its rulebook, radically altering the college sports landscape. To navigate NIL, athletic departments began to staff up, creating new positions, including general manager. Over the last year, Woj spearheaded St. Bonaventure's search for one. There were challenges. The pay was low, and unless you were an alumnus, living in a town frozen over 3 months a year wasn't appealing either. Last spring, Woj began to think, maybe I should do it. The NBA grind was getting to him. In March, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. He was already doing most of the job, advising school officials, calling recruits, steering businesses to the Bonnies Collective. So why not take it on full time? What I was doing, it just wasn't fulfilling anymore, says Woj. I was just done. This is what gets me excited, to learn something new, to be part of something like this. It's a whole new challenge, unquote. Full disclosure, Adrian Wojnarowski is a friend. In 2016, Woj recruited me to Yahoo Sports, where I joined a staff that included, among others, a young reporter named Shams Sharyana, who has now, by default, become the NBA Beat's preeminent bomber. A month before he announced his retirement, Woj was a guest at my wedding. My brother Andy even worked Woj into his best man's speech. Quote, sources close to the situation say that Chris vastly outkicked his coverage, unquote, Andy said. from a back table, Woj confirmed it. There was a no phones rule at the reception. Only one attendee broke it. Woj. His reason? A player he had been monitoring was closing in on a two-way deal. But quitting ESPN? Returning to St. Bonaventure? I didn't know. Few did. Jay Wright was among the first. In 2022, weeks after leading Villanova to the Final Four, Wright resigned as the Wildcats coach. NIL was ramping up, the transfer portal was filling up, and there was speculation that Wright didn't want any part of it. Last March, Woj called Wright. He asked why he had quit. Jay just said, "I felt like I wasn't present with my family," Woj recalls. During his final season, Wright jotted down notes to himself after tough losses. He stuffed them in a book to be opened in case he ever had the urge to return. Another resource, Bob Myers, the former Warriors general manager. In 2023, after 11 years overseeing Golden State's dynasty, Myers walked away. Woj was among those who counseled Myers during the decision. Myers was happy to do the same. When Woj told Myers that he was thinking about leaving, Myers told him that he should. "Bob's brutally honest with you," says Woj, and he's like, "You're not going to be fun to be around if you do this another year," unquote. When Woj expressed reservations about walking away, Myers told him, "Quitting on top is not the same as quitting," unquote. Besides, Myers, who joined ESPN last year, could see what was happening. He was not enjoying each day, each win that he was getting in the industry, says Myers. During draft week in June, Woj waved over Myers in a hotel lobby. Myers asked how he was doing. As he spoke, Myers noticed tears welling up in Woj's eyes. "He looked at me and he said, 'I don't think that I could do this anymore,'" recalls Myers. "And I just said, 'You shouldn't. Because really, what's it for?' I think he felt like the cost to continue to do it was too much," unquote. There was a line in Woj's retirement statement, quote, "Time isn't in endless supply," unquote. That was about the cancer, he says. Last February, Wojnarowski went in for a physical. Blood tests revealed an elevated prostate-specific antigen. His doctor sent him for an MRI. Nothing showed up. He took another PSA test, still high. This time, the doctor recommended a biopsy, which in March revealed early-stage cancer. He learned the news minutes before a remote appearance on NBA Countdown. Head foggy, he did the hit. The prognosis, Woj says, is good. "When you hear cancer, you think about it going through your body like Pac-Man," says Woj. "Prostate cancer, it generally stays confined to your prostate and is typically slow-growing," unquote. He has no symptoms and says that the cancer is, quote, "pretty limited in scope," unquote. Active surveillance is the current treatment, which translates to quarterly checkups and regular monitoring. He's been instructed to improve his eating habits, exercise more, and get better sleep. Surgery is still a possibility, but for now, doctors say the only reason to have it is if he really can't mentally deal with having the cancer inside him. Cancer did not force him out, Woj insists, but it did bring some clarity. "I didn't want to spend one more day of my life waiting on someone's MRI or hitting an agent at 1 a.m. about an ankle sprain, he says. In May, Woj traveled to Rogers, Arkansas for a memorial for Chris Mortensen, the longtime NFL insider who passed away in March from throat cancer. Mortensen spent more than three decades at ESPN. When Woj arrived in Bristol in 2017, Mortensen was among the first to welcome him. Many ESPNers made the trip to Arkansas. What Woj was struck by was how many did not. "It made me remember that the job isn't everything," says Woj. "In the end, it's just going to be your family and close friends. And it's also like nobody gives a crap. Nobody remembers breaking stories in the end. It's just vapor," unquote. On September 18th, Wojnarowski made it official. He called ESPN chairman Jimmy Pitaro. Pitaro, who was aware of the cancer diagnosis, asked Woj if he was sure. ESPN did, after all, owe him $20 million over the final 3 years of his contract. "Jimmy was great," says Woj, "but the only reason to stay was the money. That wasn't a good enough reason," unquote. Pitaro asked if Woj would consider staying on in a different role, but going back to writing the sharp, biting columns that he did for years at Yahoo did not interest him. Pitaro suggested that he could return to Countdown for the playoffs. "Our audience deserves somebody who is fully immersed in the NBA every single day, and I would not be," says Woj. "In my mind, I didn't have value to them anymore," unquote. Besides, he knew what his family wanted. Amy was ready for him to go. Years earlier, when Woj disappeared into his phone to report a big story, a DeMarcus Cousins injury, Woj recalls, she asked when she would be one. His kids, Annie and Ben, were ready too. Just before the NBA draft, Woj called Ben. He was leaning towards quitting and wanting to get his son's take on it. Ben was blunt. Quote, "People think your job is great," Ben said. "I think your job sucks. Retire and go travel with mom," unquote. Woj has a question. It's early November now, and he has just ducked out of his office in the Riley Center, which is St. Bonaventure's 5,480-seat arena. Woj works from a cold concrete room with an air conditioner so old he swears that Bob Lanier once fidgeted with it. He is now seated at the head of a conference table in a meeting room on campus. To his left is Bob Beretta, a partner at MeCamp, a processing solutions provider. To his right, a pair of officials from Ashley Furniture, a retailer with ties to the area. After a few minutes of small talk, Woj fixes his gaze on the Ashley employees. "Let me ask you this," he says. "Are you having a more positive experience in the processing world or in logistics?" Unquote. Officially, a college general manager has wide-ranging responsibilities. Transfer portal management, messaging, alumni relations, at least according to the Bonnie's job listing. When Woj informed St. Bonaventure athletic director Bob Beretta of his interest, Beretta was thrilled. "I knew he'd make an incredible asset," says Beretta. He asked Beretta to run it by the team's coach, Mark Schmidt. No-brainer, says Schmidt. Best portal recruit we've ever had, unquote. According to university rules, though, the position had to be posted publicly, and Woj had to formally apply. I haven't done a resume since my newspaper days, says Woj. At least they didn't ask for my GPA, unquote. In the NBA, the GMs call the shots. In college, it's reversed. This is Coach Schmidt's program, says Woj. I'm fitting into his culture, unquote. And raising money. Lots of money. St. Bonaventure's enrollment, some 2,000 undergrads, roughly the size of most high schools, says Woj, is among the smallest in Division I. Alums are generous, but there are only so many to call on. Woj himself has donated seven figures to the university. The focus, Woj says, is on sustainable revenue. Beretta, an old neighbor of Woj's, has met with several local businesses. If he convinces them to work with him, the Bonnies Collective gets a piece of the revenue. The trucking business offers similar opportunities. In October, Team Unfurl cut a deal with Quiz, an online trivia game that will rake in six figures. Woj sits in on each meeting, not to offer any specific insight, but to let them know the program and Woj will be part of the deal. At the end of the meeting with Ashley Furniture, Woj reminded the representatives that he would be happy to make an appearance at a nearby store. The transfer portal has become college basketball's free agency. In 2024, more than 1,000 men's players entered it. Woj keeps thick digital files on players likely to land there. Major program players averaging 10 to 12 minutes per game. International players, junior college, Division II. He's cultivating relationships with NIL agents just as he did in the NBA. If St. Bonaventure misses on a guy the first time around, his job is to be ready if they get a second crack. Ready with money and with opportunity, St. Bonaventure cannot go dollar for dollar with most schools, but Woj's presence, the Bonnies hope, can close the gap. His deep network of NBA coaches, agents, and front office executives offers players a bridge to the next level. Those are relationships that I couldn't build or we couldn't build as a staff in the next 30 years, says Schmidt. He's going to be able to help us get in the door with guys because of who he is and the trust he has built over his career, unquote. Indeed, NBA executives who used to feed Woj information are now advising him on navigating a salary cap, on building out a staff, on creating a player-friendly environment. In the Riley Center, the team has built out a room for immediate family to gather before and after games. He cut a deal with iSlides to provide players with personalized sandals. He has worked with video team to create hype videos, borrowing from the Raptors' We the North campaign in hopes of deepening the program's ties to the Toronto area, which is home to several former Bonnies players. Financially, he's fine. He's grateful for the $75,000 salary, even if it represents a 99% pay cut from his ESPN gig. Honestly, he says, I thought it would be $50,000, unquote. Recently, after a quick dinner at Perkins, Woj returned to the office. It was late after 10 p.m., but two players were out on the floor. One had a student manager rebounding for him. The other was alone. Woj was reminded of something that Clippers president Lawrence Frank told him. Quote, "Everybody's job is everybody's job," unquote. He dropped his bag and started shagging balls. "We're here to serve these guys," says Woj. "That's the job," unquote. A job that feels a lot different. And again, that feature is entitled Adrian Wojnarowski, Bombs Away. By leaving ESPN, the newsbreaker became the biggest story of the year. Written by Sports Illustrated writer Chris Mannix. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.